You build the world. The roads, schools and hospitals. That's your work. And we're with you on this journey. Procore, your trusted construction partner. Discover our construction management platform at procore.com.
Welcome to Reconstruction with David Taylor and Phil Bishop from the Construction Index. It's Thursday, the 7th of March, 2024. And yes, we're podcasting on two consecutive days this week. We're not going to make a habit of this, are we, Phil? We'll go back to the usual once a fortnight.
No, this is a special one-off. It's sort of one podcast in two editions, but it'll probably appear as two. Well, it is appearing as two separate editions.
Yes, absolutely.
Our yesterday one was slightly shorter than usual, and this will make up for it with a little bonus edition.
Yeah. And if you haven't already heard our interview yesterday with Merrill Lynch, Joint Managing Director of Lynch Plant Hire, it's well worth a listen. He had some interesting thoughts on diesel alternatives, sustainability, machine control, stuff like that. So yeah, go and have a listen to that one. But today we have a different topic to discuss. We're talking about Jeremy Hunt's budget speech, you know, what it means for the construction industry. And to help us make some sense of it all, we have another guest joining us. He's David Crosthwaite, Chief Economist with BCIS, the Building Cost Information Service. Welcome, David.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Well, I'm glad you are here because I listened to Jeremy Hunt's speech, or at least I listened to some of it, and a lot of it just washed over me. It didn't seem to say anything particularly attention grabbing from my point of view. But I'm sure there are some little nuggets in there that we should listen to.
Well, I'm not sure it really means that much for construction, to be honest.
That's all, folks.
It could be a very short podcast. Yeah. I mean, first off, the budget didn't seem like a pre-election budget to me.
Hmm.
And my suspicion is that there'll probably be another fiscal announcement. So I reckon there'll be an autumn statement in November, with the election probably happening sometime in January. And that may well have a bit more substance to it. Because when I heard it, I came away, I was completely underwhelmed. But, I mean, you know, notwithstanding the national insurance cut, but there was nothing really in there for construction. So I had a quick look to see what the election timetable was and what could be the actual latest date for an election. And actually, it's January 2025. So theoretically, there is room for an autumn statement. And I came away from Jeremy Hunt's speech yesterday thinking that perhaps that's what's going to happen. So yeah, in terms of construction, pretty lackluster. Mm. Not really much that the construction industry can take from the budget. I mean, the government says it's got a plan for sustainable long-term growth, but it appears to be mostly about the supply side. And getting more people into work rather than upping levels of investment. So there was no real increase in construction spending announced. And that's despite historically construction being used as a key lever of economic growth via the multiplier effect. And certainly from where I'm sitting, construction needs investment. We're crying out for more major projects to stimulate our economy, which has essentially been bumping along at sort of just above 0% growth. You know, a good year, it might be around 1%.
Hmm.
And we really need to get Britain growing again. Funnily enough, I was watching a Channel 4 programme about Boris Johnson last night, and It took me back to the Olympics. I think we need to build on the 2012 Olympic spirit and get some things built.
Hmm.
And there are some major projects going on in the country. I mean, HS2 is obviously one of them.
But they've cut back on that.
Yes, definitely.
And obviously HS2 has had some pretty bad press. And We seem in this country to love to bash things. And one of the problems with projects like HS2 is the initial cost estimates are always woefully off the mark, which leads to problems later when the budget inflates. But we, as a country, we really need these projects. We can't keep relying on dated infrastructure, you know, some of it actually Victorian, and expect to modernise our economy. It's just not going to happen.
I mean, the building projects that he talked about yesterday seemed tiny. I mean, he talked about building a few thousand homes in Barking and, you know, the east end of London, and there was something about, I think, £4 million to build homes around the HS2 terminus in Euston. And I thought that Euston wasn't going to be the terminus anymore. I thought he was going to all stop at Old Oak Farm. But it was peanuts, really, wasn't it? There were no major infrastructure projects announced or anything of any real substance.
Absolutely. And that's what makes me think that this was actually a trailer for something that's going to come later in the year.
Well, historically, though, I mean, maybe we shouldn't be surprised that there wasn't too much to get excited about for the construction industry in the budget. Historically, the spring budget has always been about, you know, booze, fags and petrol. It's how are we going to take your money off you? It's how are we going to raise money? And the autumn statement has been, here's the gravy, folks. Here's how we're going to spend it. But those two fiscal events have kind of got blurred over the years. And you know, maybe we're expecting there to be lots of handouts and here's some money for you folks in the budget. But that was never the point of the budget, I don't think, was it?
Who knows? I mean, I remember a time when there was only one budget a year, and that that covered everything. But but obviously now we have two. Yeah, I mean, it was a non-event. But I mean, you know, the Chancellor's clearly constrained by low growth. And the one thing that I thought was interesting was the OBR forecast, which is slightly more positive for next year. But that seems to, in terms of GDP growth, but that seems to be driven by an increase in population rather than any improving fundamentals in our economy. And I think one of the key metrics to be looking at is GDP per capita. So actually, if you look at GDP per head, there's no evidence of an increase.
Is that because of the aging population, though? We've got the Japanese problem. I mean, Japan have got it a lot worse than us. I mean, they're severely an aging population, but we're going in that direction, aren't we?
But I think the increase in population that is driving the OBR's forecast for GDP growth is fundamentally migration. So on one hand, you've got the government trying to control immigration into this country, and on the flip side, you've got our population growing through migration.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a complex problem for the government, I think. On the one hand, they want, you know, one of their manifesto pledges is to control immigration, but clearly that's a lever that's growing our economy. Certainly in GDP real terms. But if you look at GDP per capita, which I think Starmer brought up in his rebuttal yesterday, there is no growth evident. So I think it's interesting you bring up the Japan problem. This almost to me seems like a mirror of what happened to Japan starting in the early 1990s. They ended up with a decade of stagnation. And to be honest, they've never really recovered from that. And I suspect, you know, long term for the UK, it's probably something very similar that we're going to be experiencing. And I think this might just be the beginning of it. I don't want to be too much of a doom monger. I mean, I've got a reputation for being a complete pessimist. So I thought on this podcast I'd actually try and be optimistic, but I think I seem to have shot myself in the foot already.
Well, yeah, look at the material we're having to work with. I mean, I'm glad that because I wondered if I'd missed any major points, but I mean, as you said, you were underwhelmed, or so was I.
Yeah,
it really didn't seem to be much in there. I get the feeling then from what you've said that really this was a sort of a holding exercise on Jeremy Hunt's part. He just wants to keep things ticking over so that he can save all his goodies for the autumn statement and hopefully boost his chances of re-election.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it certainly looks that way. I mean, if you look at the polls, why would the government want an election earlier. I mean, they're so far behind. They need as much time as possible, I think, to try and recover some ground. So having the election in January probably is going to favour them. It gives them a little bit more time to try and recover their position. Personally, I'm not sure it's enough, but let's see what happens in the autumn statement.
David, what I would, if I was Chancellor, what I would do for the construction industry, and I'm interested in your opinion, whether you think there's, this is a mad idea or a good idea with downsides that I haven't thought of. And it's one that a lot of people have been calling for, is remove VAT on building refurbishment, on building, if I go buying wallpaper, paint, new gutters, anything I did for my house, I got to pay VAT on that. And if I didn't have to pay VAT, reduce the cost and give a little bit of an incentive and a kick to the whole, we had this big dash for growth and home, people doing up their houses during lockdown, and that's now tailed off. And we need this massive retrofit program for insulation, for, decarbonisation of homes, get energy bills down, but also just to, be a motor for the economy. Yeah. Would that be a good policy?
I certainly think it's worth looking at. I mean, the repair and maintenance sector is the only sector that's shown any real growth over the last few years. I mean, certainly since the pre-pandemic, it's been growing compared to new work, and it is really the only part of the construction economy that's kept us afloat. So absolutely, looking at ways to increase repair and maintenance spending certainly seems to make sense. And you're right to focus on retrofit, because you look at the age of our building stock, it really is not fit for purpose in terms of energy efficiency. So would make sense. I can't see the government doing it, frankly, because they seem to be talking a lot about retrofit and energy efficiency.
Yeah,
but there aren't any real policies that seem to support that. So,
but also, I think speaking cynically, part of the problem I think is that big construction, with its lobbying power, it wants to build nuclear power stations and high speed railways. It doesn't want to put in a cat flap and do some double glazing for Mrs. Bloggs. It's not lobbying for that little lots and lots of little stuff.
I mean, I personally still think we need what I call mega projects, like HS2, like Crossrail, like Crossrail 2 possibly.
But insulating Britain is a mega project.
Oh no, absolutely,
but it's not an impressive one.
Fundamentally, that in my view, that would require knocking down all the old stock and rebuilding new, which would be great for the construction sector. But I'm not sure that the general population will go for it.
No,
I don't. No, David and I, we like our old buildings. We think they can be improved. We don't need to knock them down.
Well, it's funny you should say that. I mean, I've recently moved since the pandemic. I used to live in London in a Victorian terrace that was completely leaky in terms of energy, to something that's about 5 years old in the countryside, which is a completely different experience. I've always advocated for demolishing the existing stock and rebuilding new. Fantastic stimulator for the economy.
I bet you can now paint your ceilings without getting a ladder out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, this obsession with old properties really only started in the sort of 70s, because prior to that, we were knocking it down wholesale.
Well, that's because of what they built in the 60s.
Yeah, I mean, the system building from that era certainly leaves something to be desired. But I think it's a lot better now than it was. But I'm a great advocate for, as I was saying, for mega projects. So even though they get some serious stick, and a lot of that's down to the government in the way that they handle the early stage cost estimates for these projects, because they're always overrun in terms of cost and obviously time. But once they're built, the long-term benefits to the economy are massive. I mean, you only got to look at Crossrail, the Elizabeth line, which is, exceeding expectations in terms of transporting people across the capital. And I know this is a bit of a London-centric thing, but HS2 will be the same. It will bring long-term benefits. And I think that's the way we need to look at these projects. We can't look at them in terms of today's costs. What we need to look at them in terms of the benefits that they'll provide to the economy over the long term. And theoretically, these things will last 100 years, as the Victorian infrastructure that's currently failing has done.
Yes, Crossrail was more than it was less a transport project than a regeneration
Completely.
Project. Completely.
Yeah.
All the housing, new build and new communities that can build up around the station.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's the great thing. And that's why I think Crossrail 2 should be brought out of mothballs and started on site. I mean, they spent a lot of money on the consultancy element of it, getting the design done. And then obviously money became a little bit tight, so they've had to stop it. But there is work already been done on it.
Remind me, Crossrail 2, is that the north-south one?
That's right. Absolutely.
Croydon to somewhere? Where does it go? Wimbledon to...
It goes from, I mean, this is a rough guesstimate, it goes from Surrey to up through London. It goes through Chelsea, and there's obviously lots of opposition around the King's Road. but it ends up in Hertfordshire, I think.
Right. So it's like a Thames link to the left.
Yeah, and I think it's... there's probably an old Oak Common element to it as well, so it all meets up with the HS2 station. But I mean, clearly, as David said, there was some mention yesterday of Euston and creating a development area around Euston, and HS2, whether or not it extends from old Oak Common in into Euston stations yet to be decided. I mean, obviously, I think the government wants it to, but whether or not there's appetite in the private sector for investing in that link is another matter. I think one of the problems that we've got in this country at the moment is that we're not a favourable climate for investors. You know, we've got high interest rates, and I think a lot of investors are sort of waiting to see what happens over the next few years. We're in an election cycle, either this year or early next year. There's lots of uncertainty around, so we're not the most attractive prospect in terms of getting private investment involved.
Yeah, I guess so.
The alternative view, of course, is that the Tories know they've lost the next election, so they're going to call it for May, and just they've stopped trying. They've just given up.
I've heard that as well. I heard that this morning. I'd be amazed. I just think that you know politicians are incredibly arrogant. They never think they're going to lose, even when it's obvious they are going to.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think that's most unlikely.
If it is January, it gives them 10 months to try and turn the position round. So.
And then there'll be all sorts of discussions about voter turnout in a wet, snowy, frosty, cold January day and who that would benefit.
Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, it's a way off yet. Okay. Is there anything else to say about the budget? I mean, I think we probably covered it.
The other thing I think we were hoping for was something on construction labour, because certainly since Brexit, and all this is going to be difficult to quantify, but since Brexit, the labour pool, the available labour pool for construction has shrunk considerably, and there doesn't appear to be too many hard statistics on this. I think one of the issues is obviously the Brexit effect coincided with COVID. And I think these things are quite difficult to separate statistically.
Do you not think the skills cards is a big issue there? I read an awful lot of people towards the back end of their careers learning that they've now got to get an NVQ and saying, oh, sod that, I'm not going back to school, I might as well quit now.
And become an Uber driver. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a real issue in construction is that there's not a lot of direct employment. What the sector tends to rely on is self-employment. And there are all sorts of issues with that. I mean, direct employment essentially gives you job security. There are apprenticeships and training. And also direct employment makes the sector more attractive to new entrants because you can see a career. It's not that efficient if you're a contractor, but certainly from the point of view of actors in the sector, there's a lot to be said for direct employment. So we were hoping that there would be something on training and apprenticeships, but there wasn't.
Next time, mate.
Next time, yeah. Maybe great. In the autumn statement there'll be something. Yeah.
David, thank you very much indeed for joining us this morning.
Pleasure.
But I think given that it was a bit of a disappointing damp squid, we should leave it there. But thank you very much. And to all our listeners, thank you once again. David Taylor and I will be back again in 2 weeks' time. So cheerio.
Cheerio. Thanks, David.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Reconstruction, the podcast from the Construction Index. To keep up to date with the latest construction news and headlines, please visit theconstructionindex.co.uk and sign up for our free daily email news briefing.